coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
The discussion on the Cubs here in a moment. Mellor, you wanted to wrap up something DeMarcus had to say.
Yeah, no, I think DeMarcus hit on a lot of good issues there in the last segment, and then it also led into something that Waddle was talking about. I think it's important. DeMarcus said, you know, yes, this conversation has been going on for far too long, but with no real solution to anything that's been said. And I think it's really imperative at this time, if you're truly somebody who wants to learn a little bit more about what African Americans truly deal with, and you don't want to be dismissive, you're not looking for just to get past rioting that's going on and is making things uncomfortable, but if you actually want to learn a little bit more about what African Americans face, to your point, Waddle, you know, like you said, if it's all based on merit, and everybody's, you know, equal in their setup, and you can go ahead and pursue the same jobs, and the best person wins out. That's right. The ideal scenario that we would all, I think, sign up for in a heartbeat. But the reality is that the social inequality that exists in this nation has been apparent since its inception. And I think the best thing I've ever read, and I would highly recommend our listeners, if you want to be educated about it, if you have not done so, read Ta-Nehisi Coates' The Case for Reparations, which was written in The Atlantic in 2014. Now, obviously, it was 6 years ago, but I think every word of it still holds true. It just lays out for you what African Americans face in this era based on what happened throughout slavery, the Jim Crow laws, 60 years of separate but equal, 35 years of racist housing policies, and then compounding moral debts that America has never made whole. Now, look, you can go ahead and make your own decision on what Ta-Nehisi Coates lays out. I'm not saying you have to agree with every last word, but if you read it and truly do it with an open mind, I think it'll at least maybe go to show why we're at this place we're at today. It articulates far better than I can it's very long. I'm not going to lie. It's going to take you probably an hour to get through. I'll tweet it out, but it's the best thing I've ever read about what African Americans face in society today. And I think it will shed a lot of light on what we're going through today at this moment.
Yeah. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. I want to get to more calls. I also want to play this right now. This is Gerard Parker. He's a pastor in Omaha. He was invited, from what I understand, guys, correct me if I'm wrong. He was invited. There were pastors and religious leaders of the Omaha community that were invited to the governor's office to talk about what's going on in the community today in the wake of the murder of George Floyd.
Yeah, he brought in the governor brought in a number of the community leaders into Omaha to talk about it.
And Pastor Gerard Parker recorded this after he walked out of the meeting because of what the governor, who is Pete Ricketts, the brother of Tom Ricketts, what he had to say in that meeting. Take a listen.
I sat in a room by myself for about a half hour with Mayor Gene Stothert, Pete Ricketts, and the police chief of Omaha, Nebraska, talking and sharing. Other pastors showed up in the meeting and a few African-American leaders. We met for an hour and a half on the killing of the young black man at the hands of a white man the other night in downtown Omaha. We met on it. I put context to the issues surrounding the systematic racism that produced it. Pete Ricketts said, the problem I have with you people. Did you hear what I just said? Governor Ricketts said, the problem I have with you people. And ladies and gentlemen, I walked out of the police chief's office. I walked out on Governor Pete Ricketts. As he said, he called us you people, make this go viral. He called black pastors and black black leaders in Omaha, you people. And I walked out on him.
It's incredible. And Pete Ricketts did not deny it. Pete Ricketts has apologized and obviously said that he used the wrong words. I mean, that goes without saying, right? And it's not, look, the question I have for people and a part of this discussion is, how do you feel about the Ricketts family and the ownership of the Cubs right now in the wake of this, in the wake of the Joe Ricketts story from a year or two ago? And Abdallah, you wanted to address this.
Yeah, not great, basically. So this goes back to February of last year when Joe Ricketts, when the emails came out and Joe Ricketts had derogatory comments towards the Muslim community, which I am a part of. I'm Arab American, I'm Egyptian, my dad's Egyptian. I was raised Muslim. I am Muslim, obviously. And so basically, like, then my whole comments to you guys, if you remember, over a year ago was, I hope something good comes of this. I hope that they, you know, meet with the Cubs and meet with the Muslim organizations and something good. And it's not just a PSA and here's a guy with a head cover on coming out to throw the first pitch. That's basically what they did. Like, they agreed to donate some money to some anti-bullying campaigns. They put out some PSAs, and in July, they had a Muslim dude come out and throw a first pitch. And then that's kind of it. And then, like, I don't need them to build a mosque in Wrigley Field. Like, that's not what I'm asking people to do. But when you have something in your family and it brings a bad name to your organization, you need to respond, like, doubly than what happened against that person, right? So then this comes out today with Pete Ricketts and his response. And I know that Joe Ricketts doesn't own the team. And I know that Pete Ricketts doesn't own the team. But there are things that have happened. Like Wrigley Field hosted a Trump fundraiser. And I'm not saying that it should have been Trump or Biden or Hillary or whoever. But the fact that you're holding political things at Wrigley, like, you control what you do.
Associate yourself.
You control whether you have Pearl Jam or Lady Gaga or Donald Trump. Like, it doesn't matter who it's for. The point is what you're doing and who you're supporting. And for me, as a Muslim, as a Cubs fan, as a minority, as a children of minorities, as a child of an immigrant who came over here and worked his ass off, you know, working three jobs, learning English, and then, you know, going to college and then supporting my family, it's tough to still be. I know we're supposed to root for laundry, but when the ownership doesn't seem to have your back, and this has nothing to do with baseball, I don't care how they run their team, this is just who they are as people, it just keeps coming up. It's a problem. And it's not like I don't have other options. Like, there's a team that's 11 miles south of Wrigley Field that I could easily root for and still support this city and still support a good team. And it's just tough that I know that, like I know that Anthony Rizzo doesn't have anything to do with this, and Javi Baez doesn't have anything to do with this. But if I want to go to a Cubs game and part of that money is going to the family, or if I buy a jersey, or if I buy t-shirts, or if I buy whatever, and part of that is going to support that family and they're getting profits from it, I don't know how much longer I can support that effort. Like, as of right now, I'm not going to buy tickets to Cubs games. I'm not going to spend money. I don't buy jerseys anyway, but I'm not going to buy any more Javi Baez t-shirts. Sorry, Javi. You know, like, it's
just... The question is, too, Abdallah, and this is, like, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm trying to bat it around in my brain, and we know how that goes sometimes. Like, obviously, Joe Ricketts is the father, and we know what the emails uncovered with Joe Ricketts. Now this is one of Tom's brothers, Pete, who runs the whole state of Nebraska. And does that dirty Tom? Does Tom, well, is it like brother, like father, or can Tom totally be different? Or is this a Ricketts family interest anyway, so it's tough to just escape the last name?
Listen, there are different dynamics in this family. Remember, Laura Ricketts is a gay, married, and well-known LGBTQ activist in Chicago.
Right.
So, I mean, like, I'm not saying that for any other reason, but to say to you, it is a very, there has to be some really diverse conversations that go on at dinner when they all get together.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I think,
how do you feel then about Tom? Like, there's been no, and like you all, everyone likes to say, judge the man, you know, and there have been bad things with the father and brother, but do you, so how do you, like, Tom is the guy running the team.
Yeah. Tom's the guy running the team, but who sees the profits? Doesn't Joe get some of the profits? I mean, he loaned them the money.
Sure.
Doesn't Pete get some of the profits? Doesn't Laura get some of the profits?
It's a family-owned business.
Look, my dad's a devout Muslim, okay? Like, there are certain things that he does that I don't agree with either. But ultimately, like, if someone doesn't want to support what my dad's not out in the public eye saying stuff, though. You know, like, I'm sure we all have things that our fathers and grandfathers have said and done throughout that we're not proud of, that don't represent who we are. Right. But ultimately, my family doesn't own a baseball team. My family doesn't own a broadcast network or a radio station or anything like that. So for me to say, well, I guess it's separate, but who's getting the profits from this?
I would say this, because Abdallah, you're right. But just because Tom Ricketts is in the public eye doesn't mean that all of a sudden what his family says is something that he should necessarily be held responsible for, because as we all have pointed out, I don't think we all have family members who we probably don't want to be, you know, in some ways connected with some of their views and outlooks on things. But what I would say is, because Pete Ricketts formerly was on the board of governors for the Cubs before he took office in Nebraska, right, I think it would be probably imperative for Tom Ricketts and the Cubs to denounce what he has said, because he has said now publicly that he chose his words poorly. And I don't know about you guys, but in the heat of the moment, any statement that Pete Ricketts makes at this point to not justify his actions, but no, in some way,
you don't lose perspective of any moment when you're the governor.
It's not a slip of the tongue. It's a viewpoint that you in some ways hold because you chose to make those words. So I do think it's important, personally, as a non-Cubs fan, I think Tom Ricketts should probably denounce the statements and separate himself as much as possible from what Pete Ricketts said. I think that would go probably at least a long way for Cubs fans who want to still support the team. I think, you know, a public denunciation of it would help.
I think it's an interesting perspective. You can say, look, if I'm Tom Ricketts, I don't want to be judged by anybody other than me. I want to be judged by my actions. And there may be people close to you, and you may have been raised by people that had certain opinions and certain thoughts and said certain things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I would want to be judged by who I am and my actions. So if you said, like, I don't have a problem with Tom Ricketts, but I do have a problem with the fact that this is a family business, and there are people whose perspectives and words and approach is they are things that I don't agree with and I don't align with. So I'm not going to be a customer of the Cubs, not in protest to Tom Ricketts, but the Ricketts family that does have a shared ownership benefit from having this franchise.
Like Abdallah said, when it was the father's money and when Pete was on the board of directors, now we're getting awfully, you know, we're close to home now. I mean, you really have to now probably go out of your way, like Meller said, to really remedy this. And prove the other why. You know what I mean?
Well, but again, this goes back to what I said last year. I hope it's not just a dude throwing out the first pitch and like some money for a commercial during Cubs on the Marquee Network with, you know, some Muslim woman with head covering on saying, hey, be nice to me. You know, like, that's not good enough. And that's exactly what they did.
I would be shocked if the players, especially at this time in life, I would be shocked if they didn't have strong feelings about this themselves when it's brought to their attention.
312-332-3776. So the question goes out to you. How do you feel about the Cubs and their ownership now group? It is fronted by Tom. And yes, a brother can certainly have a different viewpoint than his father. I mean, we saw it. This isn't having to do with race, but Rocky and his father were completely different in the way they would run a business. They had completely different views on everything. But there's the water's awfully muddy here. 332-3776. We got to get back to all of our calls too, to give you the forum. We wanted to get to that. Abdallah, well said. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Phone number to reach us, 332-3776. Our friend Stephen A. Smith is going to join the conversation coming up at 4 o'clock today, talking about the Ricketts story. And now Pete Ricketts, the governor of Nebraska, calling leaders of the black community, you people. And then now apologizing and saying that he chose the wrong words, obviously. But there's a lot there with Joe Ricketts and Pete now, who used to be on the board of governors before he got into political career with the Cubs. Richard is in Oak Park. Richard, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good, thank you.
Yeah, Sylvan, we're definitely looking for you to take advantage of this situation with your health. We believe that you'll do everything to make sure that you recover.
Thank you, Richard.
You're more than welcome. I just want to say real quick, I was a part of the Martin Luther King, right? I wasn't a part of it. I was 10 years old at the time. And my mom, she was really scared when it happened. We were looking out the window at the riots as they were going on. So she got us together, and we went to the bus stop on Division, the 70 Division bus, Laramie and Division. And we were getting to the bus stop, and as we arrived, the bus stopped. And some gang members got off the bus, and they were pulling white people off of the bus. And they were really, really going. They were doing them in. And now I understand, years and years after the whole thing revolved about the Gold Coast and all of that finally taking place. But here's what I want to say. The only way that this thing is going to get stalled if we wrap our arms around these young men who were doing the looting. I'm a chaplain in Cook County Jail, and they're getting younger and younger as they continue to come in there and be incarcerated. And I do my best to make sure that I mentor these young men, because that's truly what they need. They need a father figure, somebody to wrap their arms around them. I have been a part of about maybe 20-something guys' lives mentoring them from Cook County and the Work Release Center. And I can honestly say that mentorship works. I have a young man now who's a professor at Loyola University. I have some other young men who are prospering, have their own companies. But that's just because I took the time, me and our ministry, to make sure that these guys was about the right thing in life. And I'm continually doing it right now. And that's what we really need. We need somebody big-time people, you know, I hate to say it, but those young men, when they're looting, you know what they're really looting for? They're looking for Jordans. They're looking for those types of things, you know. And if a big-time person came and gave them, you know, I can actually honestly say that it works, because what we've been doing with this process is really, really helping these young men. I grew up without a father, and I know I have three children. And all three of my children are adults, and my two daughters are in the medical field, and my son works for the city. I know when you have someone to give you good advice that it works. We need some of those big-time, they're not role models. I don't want to even put that on them.
Mentors, but like you said, yes.
Right, right.
Let me ask you a question real quick, because I don't want to take the focus away from the hideous murder of George Floyd, because I want to make sure that everyone knows we're staying focused on that. But I mentioned something earlier about fair and equal opportunity. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about, is finding ways to give young African Americans the same fair and equal opportunities to live successful lives as white people and everybody else. Is that kind of your focus, of trying to find enough people to create these fair and accessible opportunities?
Yes, yes, because I was a drug addict for 16 years, and I've been clean for 30 years, and I dedicate my life to helping these young men. And you're absolutely right about trying to make sure that we give them, they don't listen, and I'm telling you, I'm in Cook County, and when I go to Cook County, they don't listen to the people who come in there with briefcases and those types of things. They listen to those who come from the same type of background that they come from. And that's just one instance. But you guys are doing a great job with handling this the right way. You know, I do always call them, you know, I could say this because it's out of my, this is not my jurisdiction at this particular time. You know, I laugh and joke, and not only are they black, see, we have to understand there's 90% that's in Cook County. And even with the white guys that's locked up, we have, we just have a good time. And we just have to wrap our arms around them and treat them as the individuals that they can be, not what they are already. And then we'll be able to address the situation. And that's my point on everything that we've discussed. And
good
thank you, guys.
Richard.
You're so
thank
good.
You.
You're really, really great.
All the best to you, Richard. Thank you. You know, it's like when you have to throw out that, oh, okay, someone brought this up, a caller brought it this up yesterday, that the Rooney Rule, we have to have a Rooney Rule to begin with. And now the Rooney Rule is broke. And now we have to think about having the discussion of awarding people draft picks for hiring the right person.
Well, Sylvie, this is my thought about equal and fair opportunity.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what led me there, is that when you have to bring that up, that's when you need to lock the 32 owners in a room and say, this is ridiculous that we have to talk about this, that we have to amend this rule. Start doing things differently.
It's you know, it's wild. I mean, I've been in a locker room for 20 years of my life, almost half of my life. Doesn't make me an expert. Doesn't mean that, you know, I've made all the right decisions. But I have been exposed to people from different religions, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different, you know, environments, different everything. And it gives you perspective. And I've been around, you know, white coaches. I've been around African-American coaches. And I just can't come to... It's just, it baffles me, like, how a guy like Eric Bieniemy, who is trusted by Andy Reid as the defending Super Bowl champions, how Eric Bieniemy is not more in the focus of teams looking for a head coach. Do you know what I'm saying?
Of course. And that's that should be the
baffling sign.
Wait a minute. We're thinking about putting in an award for doing... hiring the right person.
Right.
That's where we're broken in the system. We need to lock ourselves in the room and come up with a solution that isn't like that, and we just hire the right people.
And dude, this is the point. And then once you give them the opportunity, then they are evaluated like everybody else. Like, if you go 5-11 for 3 straight years, you're probably going to lose your job, regardless of the color of your skin. I just want to see Eric Bieniemy get the same opportunity as somebody else. And once he gets that opportunity, it's up to him to then be judged, to do well, and he will then be judged by, you know, the merits of how he performs.
Right.
But it just seems weird to me that, like,
especially
in a sport that has 70-plus, you know, more than 70% of the participants – are African-American, that there are so few of African-American head coaches in the league. And I think it also starts in the one thing, the conversation at least is important to start having, and they were having this, is you got to start below even the head coaching spot. You got to be looking to give guys opportunities to go from being position coaches to offensive and defensive coordinators.
Well, they finally got the rule right where you can now get clearance before you could block an interview. You know, if you had someone on your staff for a coordinator's job, you could block it. Now you can't.
See, like, I'm very passionate about the merit system where you are rewarded, or you know, your success or failure is based on how you do. But I'm also really enthusiastic about making sure that everyone has the same opportunity, and to this point it just hasn't been the case.
Right.
So the merit system doesn't work if the opportunity, the fair and equal opportunity, doesn't exist.
To hammer your point home, Waddle, you're talking about, you know, it's, you're scratching your head about Eric Bieniemy not having a head coaching job, and I think most people know this, but again, the last few coordinators who worked under Andy Reid, Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson,
they're head coaches.
Yeah. And they're both white.
Sure. Hugh in Reno, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Hugh. Is Hugh gone?
We lost Hugh.
It's okay. We'll get to all the calls coming up. I got a break anyway. I know Brandon and Harding and Brian, there are so many people who want to talk, and we got to get them on, too, and give them the floor. We're trying to give everyone as long as they want to take today. And obviously, this is an important topic, and you just can't be in and out in 20 seconds. 332-3776. Stephen A. is going to join us at 4 o'clock. Make sure when you're at home, too, even if you're getting home earlier these days, that you tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000. And you can also listen on the ESPN Chicago app.
This is Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Phone number to reach us, 312-332-3776, giving you guys the floor today, our fans, our listeners, to have this discussion. There's a human issue, 332-3776. I know a lot of people want to talk, and Stephen A. is going to join us coming up at 4 o'clock. Brandon in Broadview, you're on ESPN 1000. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for taking my call. I always listen. I never call. Hey, Sylvie, I'm praying for you, brother. I got your back. You're going to be good. And I just want to give a different spin. You guys keep bringing up some great things, but it's systemic racism, man. That's what bothers me. I'm 50 years old, and it's systemic racism. And since it's out here on the table, we can't hide from it. Tommy, seems like you guys are wanting solutions to this thing. I hear you guys listening, man. You're listening to the people, and I think this is going to change you guys. I know it's going to change you all. It's changing you all right now. I can tell the way you guys are talking as I'm listening. And one of the ways we got to start is this. I'm talking to all of my white people. It's called white privilege. Look in the mirror and accept it for what it is. Stop denying that you don't have it. And once you accept it, and say, yes, there's a certain thing that's called white privilege. We all could start to get better. You know what? If I had a such thing as black privilege, yeah, I would love it too. And it's almost to the point where when white people feel that they're getting attacked and they're losing that, they turn the other way and they don't want to see it for what it is. These problems have been here for a very, very long time. And the systemic racism that we're putting up with, I'm going to give you an example. We're tired of having equal or even better credit than white people, but can't get good home rate loans. That's systemic racism that we're tired of dealing with on an everyday basis. Tommy, even playing field is schools in Chicago. You can't spend $36,000 on a kid, one kid in the suburbs, and that's for a whole classroom in Chicago. You can't have schools closing down, oversized classroom. They got to get Chicago the best teachers. If I was a white person living in a suburb, I would have my hands raised to say, educate these young kids in Chicago. Give them the best teachers, best everything. Because you know what happens? Most people from the suburb, what do? They want to come downtown to Chicago. That's when things happen. They get robbed. They get this and that. It's the lack of education. I would want them to get the best of everything. But see, we have to stop with the systemic and the white privilege. And if you look at your mirror, look in the mirror, and every white person, I'm telling you, do it yourself, because we're tired of going on social media and we're tired of seeing a black person moving into an apartment complex. And now you have a white person saying, oh, what are you doing here? As if I can't live here. You know, as if I couldn't get housing here at all. You see two black guys in a pool. All of a sudden, what are you doing here? You see the guy in Central Park last week walking the dog. The white lady just all of a sudden makes up. That's white privilege right there. And white people need to call it out. It's on everybody, but white people need to stand up. If this doesn't change you, any white person, if this doesn't change you, there's something wrong with you. It's right now what we're going through, and you got to step up. It's time to put your big girl panties on and big guy drawers on. You have to talk to your kids about it. You
Hang
have
me up
to.
Until
you
then
can't get
with
around.
My panties.
Yeah.
But I under Brandon, thank you. I mean, I saw the video.
Be safe, guys.
Yeah, Brandon, thank I saw the video all. A week or two ago. I don't know if you saw this one, Waddle. And this really struck me a couple weeks ago. It was a delivery driver in the middle of COVID who was delivering like a big one of those big at-home things. You know, everyone's trying to improve the house, getting a lot delivered to the house during COVID in an affluent neighborhood. and he was leaving the community. It was a gated community. He was let in. He had made the delivery.
Yeah.
And he was a black delivery driver, and he was leaving. And a guy who, like, was on the board of the gated community put his car in front of the delivery truck and wouldn't let him leave until they found out who he was and why he was in there.
And that's where, when Jonathan tells us, like, you know, the first few sentences when we discussed with him yesterday, he's, you know, the answer. And it is to do the right thing. That's not the right thing. I mean, and the caller's right. If you're in that community, you need to call out that homeowner, you know, whoever was in charge of the homeownership board and was blocking the exit for the African-American delivery driver. There's just no other way to say it than it's unacceptable. That's the only way to describe it. It's unacceptable.
Harding's in Orland Park here on ESPN 1000. Hey, Harding.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
So I've called Cap, I've called Carmen in Yorkville, and now I want to make sure you guys understand. Waddle, you asked the question earlier, what good is it brought to the minority business owner when it's looted? I want to be sure it's clearly understood. There is a protest occurring regarding police brutality. Then separately, there is looting, riots, and anarchy happening simultaneously. So what I would, again, challenge everybody to do not speak of these in the same breath. One has nothing to do with the other. When we speak of them together, it gives white people that want to hide from the ugly truth an opportunity to find an out from the discussion of a reality. They have the power to change. They have to do it through uncomfortable growth. I'm sorry. Joe Ricketts has made racially insensitive comments. Pete Ricketts also made insensitive comments. There's a great chance Tom Ricketts is in the same mind frame, but perhaps he's fighting his demons. So we don't judge him until he says something. All we can do is hope you work to do a better version of you each day. If Tom stays silent, then I assume he's complicit with his family members. You guys mentioned the delivery driver. That African-American delivery driver, when he's put in that situation, he's somewhat powerless, because when the Caucasian community is allowed to weaponize a police department, what do we do? And when you guys ask, what can you do? That's where your white privilege comes up. You make sure you call that out, like you said. You make sure you defend the right that's being wronged, because more than likely the victim of that wrong does not have the opportunity to speak up, because you have the individual confronting them, and even the person that's supposed to be paid to protect that person is also a threat to the victim. So I'll just say that, guys, and I love the show. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks,
well,
Harding.
I would just suggest that any time that I have expressed my complete displeasure and disgust with watching storefronts be looted and damaged and human beings attacking other human beings, I have always, and Mellor talked about it yesterday, I have always told you that you have to be able to, and it's easily discernible, to differentiate between the peaceful protesters and those that aren't peaceful protesters.
Yep.
And listen, you may think I'm misguided. You may think I don't have the right perspective. That's fine. I'm just telling you, watching minority community businesses be destroyed was just, I mean, it's the same message that your mayor is, I live in Lake County, so, I mean, I'm not in Chicago, but the mayor of Chicago, she's, Lori Lightfoot is saying the same things, that the protest, the peaceful protest is great. The destruction and the looting down in the city is not acceptable. And
right.
She's making the same differentiation, and I think it's easily identifiable.
Brian's in Palos Heights. You're on ESPN 1000. Hi, Bri.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing? I just kind of wanted to address things and say, like, you know, I don't think white people really disagree with what they saw. I think everyone pretty much agrees that they did not like what they saw. I think the problem really is the tactics, you know. You know, using violence is not going to sway people over. Like, you know, I know there is two different groups, but the thing is, it's hard to tell two different groups from the TV, because they all look the same when you just see anarchy going on. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, couldn't we try to, instead of just protesting or just, you know, causing like a bunch of damage, couldn't we just hold our elected leaders responsible, literally hold our vote hostage? Because last I checked, Chicago, Detroit, New York, these are all places that have almost black majorities. So if the black people don't vote for someone, he's not getting elected. So my theory was, is if we don't like particularly how the police force is doing something, the next leader that we get in, we won't reelect that person. And every person that we elect in, we're going to hold them to a high accountable standard. And if they don't, we're not going to let them in again. Basically, use democracy to get what we want. And, you know, the president is federal. He has no jurisdiction against the police force. There's nothing he's going to be able to do. So it's not like, you know, basically what I'm saying is, like, we have the power to change things right here, right in the city, and right when we vote. So that's just basically all I was going to try to say. And I do think black people do have power. I just don't think they realize it as much. You know, they dominate sports. We've had a black president. They have the power if they want to just change their area. I'm not saying they have the power in the United States everywhere, but in certain areas, they can be the change.
So I think Adam Abdallah. I think Adam Abdallah had a great point yesterday. It's listen, the most powerful thing is your voice in terms of voting, and it's not just at a national level. It's local. You know, and I think, Adam, you made great points yesterday about it. If you don't know your local representatives, then in some ways you have to assume responsibility for, you know, condoning some of the actions of those and those, the votes of those, and the policies of those local representatives.
Do you think people know that there are 9 states with elections today?
No.
Today?
No.
New Mexico, District of Columbia, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Maryland, South Dakota, Indiana, Montana, and Iowa all have elections today.
Yeah, and look, he mentioned there were a couple of things that were way flawed with what he had to say, and the protesters are way different than looters. There's a difference between protesting and rioting and looting.
Like I said, Lori Lightfoot.
It's what, Waddle, you said it earlier, that this country has been built on the foundation of protesting.
Lori Lightfoot is the mayor of the city of Chicago, and it's the message that she is speaking on a daily basis.
And then a caller called in and said, look, if it's your family member, you don't want to protest? I mean, come on now. I mean, think about it and how this is going over and over and over and over, and it doesn't change. So 312-332-3776. More of your calls and Stephen A. coming up at 4.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
15 minutes away from a conversation with Stephen A. We'll also get to some sports with baseball and the proposal and the NBA and some other things coming your way in the next couple of hours. I want to go to Hugh in Reno is back. Hugh, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up?
What's up, fellas? Sylvie, you shook my hand one time at Joe's Bar on Weed Street during the Jay Cutler show.
Sure.
Just want to let you know I'm thinking about you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was a remarkably small hand, wasn't it, Hugh?
But it was really strong, though. It was small, but it was strong.
I hate the way, like, when we go back to shaking hands again. Uh-huh. Yeah, when we go back to shaking hands again, that wet fish handshake is like the most disgusting handshake.
Yeah.
So if you have a small hand, you got to overcompensate. You got to give a good grip.
Exactly. So I was in the military for 10 years, deployed to Iraq in 2003. And pretty much everyone, junior soldiers, senior enlisted, and even a lot of officers, refer to Iraqis as derogatory term. It took one staff sergeant one day to sit us down and say, look, not everyone in this country is an insurgent. Some of them are just people trying to survive in a war-torn country, and they don't deserve to be referred to as that. You call them, in my presence, Iraqi nationals. That's what you say. And I thought about that, and one, he was 100% correct. And I'm also thinking in the police academies, the various police academies across our nation, how many of those senior instructors at the academy are teaching the cadets and the future of the police force that exact same message? If someone's walking through a cafeteria and he's a group of cadets, drop the N-word or something. Are they going to them and are they explaining to them why they shouldn't do that and how they should view black people? Or are they just letting it slide and just chalking it up? I'm just curious about that. I'll hang up with you guys with the say.
Let me ask you a question before you go, okay? As a former soldier, when you find yourself in harm's way and you find yourself in a tense environment, What is it your training that leads you to make the right decisions and not make the obvious wrong decisions?
Absolutely, it's the training. And again, it's the senior NCOs. Like, they'll say, okay, you don't know who's an insurgent, so you have to be alert. But at the same time, not everyone needs to be in your ire. You know, like, not everyone needs to, like, have a gun pointed at them for no reason. But at the same time, you have to be alert, but treat them like a human being, basically.
I asked the question because I have no, like, I was talking with Meller at the break, like, I don't know where does the reform, and again, I, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of great police officers of all religions, all race, all gender, whatever the case may be, but there are bad police officers, and how do you make sure that you fix the system where you raise the level of expectation or you raise the bar? And I said this yesterday, Sylvie, that the good cops that make up the majority of all police forces in this country, and they do have enormously difficult jobs, they're going to clear that bar, that raised expectation, because they're good at what they do and they do it for the right reason.
Yeah.
But I don't know where does that change end? Because people are looking for justice and they're looking for, you know, they're looking for things to be done in an equitable, understandable, and fair way.
Right. You can't get all these marks against you and continue to keep a job. You just can't. Like you said yesterday, that there's got to be as little room for error as possible on this job. And look, it's going to have an effect. And sometimes there may be someone who's unjustly fired. But I this isn't like your normal job either, you know? That term that Hoodie used, you can't bat .225 right. As a police officer. That's not good enough. It's not good enough to shoot 50% from the field, you know? Kenny in Hyde Park, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Kenny.
Oh, this is Jay.
Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, speaking to, like, what Mark Giancarlo said yesterday, I tried to call in, man, but I couldn't get through. But, you know, what black people really want, man, we want those three other officers arrested.
Yeah.
That's what's really fueling this fire, man. You know, they arrested the one cop who had his knee on the guy's neck. But those other three officers, they need to be arrested and charged now and then let the justice system, you know, go where it may. But even what Mark said yesterday, man, you know, me as a black man, I'm a black guy. You a white guy. And still, well, I think you're Jewish.
I'm still white, yeah.
John Waddle, you're Caucasian, you're a white guy, all right? No problem with that, man. We don't like being called people of color, man. Just say black guy. You know what I'm saying? It's like what Mark said yesterday. Without the condescending tone.
Right.
Black man, it's just like, man, we don't care if you say black man. You know, I prefer you call me a black guy instead of African American. And it's just like Mark said yesterday, he grew up as a white, so called privileged guy. He didn't say he was a non colored privileged guy. He said he was a white man.
Right.
So, you know, things like that, man. You know, we all know the history of the country, man. And when people say America is, America was birthed off violence, man. They revolted, you know, the Boston Tea Party. They didn't want to pay no more taxes to King George, man. I mean, when you get injustice that's been going on for 400 years with my people, you know, it's like having a boil on your arm, bro. And, you know, when you go through Jim Crow, you go through Reconstruction, you go through slavery. And then, you know, you got police, you know, you got your hands on the steering wheel and you still get shot. Even if you comply, you still get murdered. So it's a lot of components to this thing, man. It's not one thing and it's not going to be one solution. We just got to be real, man. I mean, it's some messed up things that have happened to black people. We just talking about black people. You know what I'm saying? No other people have been done the way that black people have been done over 300 years, man, and haven't been given any justice. So, like I say, the main thing with this riot, I'm not condoning the riot. I have a friend that had a business on the west side, and he sent me a picture yesterday. They burnt his business
he inherited that business from his grandmother, man, and they burned it down.
Black owned.
Right. So I don't condone the looting, man, but when you are in a situation where you don't, where you're hopeless, and you had Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Farrakhan, Elijah Muhammad, all these mega Evers, and it's, and the stuff is still going to Rodney King. He got
camera,
and it's on camera. That's like it's not. It's been happening. We can just see it now.
And it's just
a continuation of injustice, man. So, you know, we just want those three other officers arrested and charged. So I'm sorry for rambling, but, man,
no,
thanks
that's
for
good.
Taking
it's newer. Hey, Waddle, good
hey, Waddle, man. Hey, Waddle, you one of my favorite, man. You used to take those hits. Like I say, me and Sid, we born in the same year, 1971, class 89. I grew up watching you, man. You held on to that ball, bro. I respect you, man.
Thank you. And I respect your thoughts and your words
good
as
call.
Well. Thank
good
you for
call.
Calling.
And that was like a double team right there.
Yeah.
You know, she was echoing a lot of things that he was saying, and it was a great call.
Listen, you've heard it a lot. I mean the officer, it took forever to arrest him.
Right, and the charge still isn't right.
Yeah.
And then the three other people. Yes.
People want justice. People want justice.
Adrian Wojnarowski's got news on the NBA. We'll introduce that and then get to Stephen A. with a conversation with him in 2 minutes.